Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, John Schwab here from Curtain Call, and welcome to episode 134 of the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, the podcast that brings you backstage as close as you possibly can be, often while the shows are actually happening, to meet the people that make that theater happen. Just a quick reminder that you can download and subscribe to the podcast from the Apple Podcast app or from iTunes. That way your feed will be automatically updated when we release our episodes, but you can also listen to us on many other fine podcast streaming services such as Stitcher and Google Play. While you're there, please rate and review our podcast if you have a spare 30 seconds and help us reach more theater lovers and professionals out there around the globe. And now for this week's podcast. There is a new theater in London, and there is a London debut to mark its opening. The Boulevard Theater, right smack bang in the middle of Soho, is London's most technologically advanced theater with a capacity of 165 and featuring a full revolving balcony and auditorium. That just gets me super excited. And what also gets me excited is the show that's going to open the theater, David Malloy's Ghost Quartet. Now, you may not have heard of it, and it's probably because it's never played London, but you have most likely heard of David or his shows before. Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 being his most high-profile offering, picking up 12 nominations in the 2016-2017 Broadway season, winning many, many awards on its way there during its off-Broadway run. Other shows of Malloy's includes Preludes, which you may have heard of. It opened at the Lincoln Center in New York in 2015, but it is currently running in London at the Southwark Playhouse. But we're here to talk about Ghost Quartet, a song cycle, a staged concept album, if you will, about love, death, and whiskey. It's a series of songs that take you through the interwoven previous lives of four characters' collective histories. I may have made that sound confusing. It's not. It all comes together beautifully. It's a fascinating concept, and I, for one, cannot wait to see it. Carly Bodden, Niccolò Corradi, Maimouna Menon, and Zubin Varla will star in what is a heavy-hitting West End cast. Now, I sat down with Malloy last week to chat to him about the concept of Ghost Quartet, its London premiere, and working with the creative team that drove the success of the Pie Shop Sweeney Todd, which ran for ages in Tooting here in London, in the West End, and in New York. Have a listen. Ghost Quartet isn't a known London property.
No, it's London premiere.
It's London premiere.
Yeah.
So I was hoping for maybe a little a potted history of it, and a little bit about what it is, because it's not your everyday book musical, shall we say?
Yeah, it's a pretty experimental musical.
Yeah.
To me, I think all the best ways. And that piece has the history of the writing of that piece was very, very particular in that it was very much written for the original four performers, which was myself and just three dear friends of mine.
Amazing.
And two of those friends starred in Great Comet. So Britton Ashford and Gelsey Bell played Sonia and Mary in the very, very first off-Broadway production of Great Comedy in the ADC Theater, and they premiered it on Broadway as well.
Love
1,200
that.
Feet.
I love it when somebody goes all the way, like takes the whole journey with
and
you.
And that was actually most of that cast. I think
really?
It was like, I think it was like 7 or 8 people of the 10 core people
so
did the entire journey.
That is
so we were such a family, and we still are to this day,
a
family. But so I was, just like became dear friends with both of them and just loved both of their voices so much. And they had smaller roles, they weren't the lead roles in Great Comedy. They had incredible roles, and Britton had Sonia Lone, which brought down the house every night. But I just really wanted to write a piece for their voices and really featuring their two voices. And at the same time, one of the cello players in Great Comet, Brent Arnold, is also this incredible singer-songwriter and has a rich baritone voice and plays every string instrument under the
Shouldn't
sun.
Every cellist have a rich baritone
Absolutely.
Voice?
Absolutely, yes.
Sorry, and that wasn't being sexist. I'm just saying that men tend to have
a hearty alto.
Very hearty alto.
Yeah,
there you go. Thank you, Dave, for saving us.
And so literally the four of us were like hanging out at Brent's apartment one night, drinking whiskey and playing Risk, the board game Risk.
Okay.
And they just had this kind of brainstorm moment of like looking around at the these three incredible musicians. And
each
like,
holding a different type of whiskey? Was it,
Maker's
Mark?
I actually think it might have been Maker's Mark that night. We all had the same whiskey that night, but I was just like, my God, like I should write, the four of us should do a show.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I want to write a show that like features the three of you because like you're such incredible performers. And so they were like, yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. What would it be? And then we like started talking and we kind of came across, stumbled on the idea of telling ghost stories.
Yeah.
And all of us kind of write melancholy music. Most of our songs have a sort of lilting, wistful, ghostly quality.
Mm-hmm.
So it just felt like the right fit. And so we kind of like met a couple times and just talked about ghost stories and talked about music we love and things we wanted to do on stage. And then I kind of went off with that and wrote like this sprawling mess of a libretto that was really, I was very, very free when I first started writing. I was just kind of writing all these different ghost stories and different songs that might be about ghosts. And then we kind of got together. We did a workshop of it in Berkeley, California, and had like note cards spread all over the floor. And I think originally there were like 35 or something different characters. Like Robin Hood was a character, and there was a judge and a scientist, and Scheherazade was a character, and Thelonious Monk was a character. And little by little, we started like kind of like whittling that down together. Like, what's most compelling to us? What if we combine these two characters? And we stumbled across, like, again, through conversations, this very complicated narrative weaving these four different stories of four different people across 7 different centuries.
Yeah.
So one is in like Scheherazade's time. One is a kind of perverted grim fairy tale.
Yeah, yeah.
One is based on Edgar Allan Poe's The House of Usher. And one is a contemporary story set at based on a New York Post photo of someone about to be hit by a subway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we kind of started spinning these four tales and then kind of stumbled across the idea of like, well, what if these four, the characters in each of these four stories are kind of reincarnations of themselves? And the piece is very much a puzzle and the piece is told completely out of order and it's like deliberately confusing. And the idea is that at a certain point, you kind of let go of the narrative and flow with it, and it's very much an emotional piece. And it's a piece, so it's music driven, and because of that, the staging is very minimal. Although, we'll see
production
happens.
We'll see. Well, listen, I think it's a lot of the excitement has come from the fact that Ghost Quartet hasn't been done in London. Also, no production has been in London. All the space since it's been revamped, and
The space is beautiful.
We're all looking forward to having a look at how the new, the most technological, the advanced Revolve, it's a revolving theater. I can't wait. But, you just spoke about the different music as well, is that song cycles aren't necessarily done here.
Mm.
It's something that's kind of in the American vernacular. I don't think it's very much...
even in America, it's a kind of obscure art form, I think, the song cycle. And like for me, like Schubert is actually like where it comes from. And I did a piece based on Winterreise many years ago. But like even in American composers, I don't think it's something that is super well known,
The cast recording I love it because it spans so many. I mean, I'm a music fiend and I just I love all types, My son's choristers at Southern Cathedral, so that was something that was introduced to me, was the English choral tradition, and getting that rich kind of it, but also, know, I used to play drums in an Americana folk band, you know, so it's that kind of...
I love it all.
And so for me, the great thing about a song is it takes you the journey that you can take on this. And love the different sounds that you have incorporated into the music. So in your writing of the song cycles, were you conscious of getting as much in there, the different flavors? Because I think if somebody doesn't just get the discordant, almost opening of it into this lovely melodies of, and the whiskey tasting, you know, the fun that it takes you, feels New Orleans, or it feels like industrial at one point, feels slightly classical at another point. Was that something you were consciously looking down?
I mean, I think that that's something I'm conscious of actually in all of my work, like in just like being really, really diverse and just kind of pulling from everything in terms of trying to make something that sounds new, you know, like trying to taking disparate musical styles and mashing them together into something unexpected. And I'm the same way in terms of like my own like musical history is like I very much grew up on like obviously 80s pop, but also my, you know, parents, you know, like listening to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, but then my dad was also a big jazz buff, so also like growing up on John Coltrane and Miles Davis, and then I went to school and became a classical junkie and like, you know, piano literature in particular, and also like sang in choirs all through high school and college, and so the rich choral tradition, like and some of my favorite writing is to do is choral writing.
Me too, yeah.
And then actually the craziest part of my music education, I feel like, is I moved to San Francisco after college and I worked in Amoeba Music, which is like the largest independent record store in America. And I got such an education there because they had experts on every field of music there. And so I was like, industrial music, I don't really know what that is. So I just go to the industrial guy and be like, hey, what are like the 10 best industrial albums ever made? And they'd be like, here's Throbbing Gristle. And you know, and so I just learned so much about music from that. And I've just kind of always, you know, embraced everything. And I love listening to music on shuffle and being surprised by what comes next. And so, with telling the idea of telling ghost stories, like there's so many versions of that that go through music. Like there's murder ballad traditions. There's also like, you know, like the really discordant stuff. Like George Crumb was a huge influence for this piece. Who's a, you know, very experimental and strange American composer that I'm obsessed with. And so just kind of pulling on all those different things.
The creative team, you know, the design team, and you've got Bill Buckhurst too.
Yes.
You know, so you've got the Sweeney Todd. Now, we knew about Sweeney Todd here in London forever. I mean, it was the one that everyone went down to tuning to see, you know, in the pie shop. And it's had an incredible run. There's two sides to this question. How much is it a blessing, but also how much is it a curse? Because these guys have come through and the expectation may be off the charts.
Oh.
But it's still something that's new. Again, in a new production for London, new space. You know, a creative team that had a fantastic sellout hit across both sides of the Atlantic. When you guys got into the room for the first day, there must have been conversations around that. And what have those been like?
I mean, for me, I still don't quite know like what that show was over here. Right. You know, I mean, obviously it sounds like it was a real runaway smash, but I got to see it in New York at the Barrow Street, and like, I had been hearing about it for, you know, I actually saw it towards the end of its run at Barrow Street, and I've been hearing about it for years. And actually, Sweeney Todd is like one of the Sondheims that I know the best, and I've seen many, many productions, and I saw, but when I saw that production at Barrow Street, I was completely blown away by it. Like, I just loved it so much. And like, honestly, like the musical arrangement of it, like the paring it down to what I think it was like piano and clarinet and violin or something, and no microphones. Like, I was just so struck by it. So when Bill contacted me about like, hey, I've been listening to your ghost quartet and I want to adapt it, I was like, you know, put on a production of it. I was like, absolutely. Like, I had such trust in him because I had seen him take one of my favorite musicals and do like incredible, extraordinary things with it. And when he said that they were like getting that whole team back together, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was most thrilled about is I asked him, you know, did you ever see Ghost Quartet in New York? And he's like, no. And I'm like, good.
Was that good? Okay.
Yeah, because he's only heard the music, so he's heard the album. And like, we made our, you know, I had a brilliant director, Annie Tipp, was who did our production of it, and then a brilliant designer, Christopher Bowser, and he was our set and lighting designer. And it was really just the six of us. It was the four cast members and those two, and that was it.
Wow.
We were the six people who made that show.
That's a small team. Yeah. That's a small company, I should say.
And it was really coming off of Comet. It's like Comet had just like transferred off Broadway, and suddenly there were hundreds of people involved in Great Comet. And I was like, oh, this is amazing, but also like, this is is overwhelming, and I want to do something small. So Ghost Quartet was very much, you know, designed intentionally very small. Like, we didn't bring in... I ran the soundboard in the first production of it. Like,
oh, wow.
While playing the piano.
I love this day.
Yeah.
We
eventually did, like, start bringing on, like, a stage manager sound when we started touring it. But I love our version of the show that we made with Annie and with Chris. And we've toured that show all over. We actually were in Edinburgh with that production. Yeah. And I love that version of the show. And I know that we'll do that show again. And, like, we still... dream about, like, we want to do it in Tokyo someday, you know. But at the same time, I'm so thrilled to see, well, what does someone else do with this piece? Mm. And the piece is very much written, like, the score is pretty much mostly in lead sheet style.
Okay.
So the vocal lines are all written out, the chords are written there, and, like, the key instrumental lines. But other than that, it's, like, really free.
Yeah,
because, like, you know, I don't expect anyone to ever cast this show with, you know, a tenor who plays piano and ukulele and a baritone who plays cello and erhu and guitar, you know, and a soprano who plays Celtic harp, and, you know, so it's very much open to what are the strengths of the four performers you get together, and what, you know, instruments do they play, and how can you rearrange this music. So I can't wait to hear both what they do with it musically in terms of the rearrangements, and, like, you know, there's no stage directions in the script. It's just like, here are these, you know, 20 or whatever songs, and, you know, part three should be in the dark, and then you pass out whiskey in this song, and that's about it, you know. So I can't wait to see what Bill and his team bring to it. And I've really given them carte blanche, like, you know, go wild.
It's gonna be fantastic. It would be remiss of me not to talk about or ask you about Natasha Pierre.
Oh, sure.
The great comedies. Yeah. I mean, because it was such a huge success.
Yeah.
Like, was it 12 Tony nominations?
Sure. It was 12.
And, great. You know, that kind of success must... And it must feel great, but does it open up doors for people to come and go, actually, now that you've done that, and I'm sure Natasha's going places, and you know, you've won so many awards, Dave, for a great, you know, I've had a little look, I did a little bit of digging, but you bring a fresh, I think, fresh voice to musical theatre. And so are people coming to you to look at your back catalogue or look at the things you've done before, and has it just opened a few more avenues that weren't there before Comet?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so many things have come from Comet. I mean, the last show I did this year was Octet, which was a piece at the Signature Theater.
Oh, but yes. I hope we get to see that. I hope.
Oh,
hope.
Me too. Yeah,
I really do hope.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually in the process of mixing that album right now.
Really?
So I've, like, had that in my
headphones. It is a cappella, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
No instruments, and just eight parts.
Exactly.
From it. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
can't
just
wait.
Eight voices.
Like, you literally speak in my language. I cannot wait to hear it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, not at all. But I mean, but that piece, you know, I'm in residency at the Signature Theater now. Mm. And, like, that piece, because the artistic director of the Signature Theater, Paige Evans, was also, she had been the artistic director of Lincoln Center Theater 3, which is where Preludes premiered. And the reason that they commissioned Preludes is because they had seen Great Comet. You know, they were like, we saw Great Comet, we love your work. Like, what would you want to do if you came to Lincoln Center? And so, yeah, from there, and, you know, the other opportunities have come up, and the, you know, shows I'm working on that I can't talk about yet are happening. And and I think also, like, you know, Moby Dick is the next big show I have coming up, and I think the success of Comet, like, allowed, you know, people to see, like, oh, like, you know, this is a gigantic novel, like a musical adaptation of a gigantic classic novel. Like, we're not afraid of that. Like, you know, we've seen how this can be done. And so ART is putting that on. ART had Comet as well.
That's right,
and so they have such faith in Rachel and I as a team. And we can't wait to do it again with a totally different book.
Well, that's fantastic. I really do. I hope we get more of your work over here. I really
do. Me too.
You know, I think people are itching for live entertainment these days. Mm. You know, we get screen time. And, you know, more and more theaters are opening up. I love the fact that we've got new theaters in London opening up all the time. You know, and I'm glad to see you over here. Please come back.
Will do.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Dave. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure.
Writer David Molloy there talking about a show, Ghost Quartet, about to open the Boulevard Theater in its first ever production. I, for one, cannot wait to go. And if you can't wait to see David's work, his musical Preludes is playing at the Southwark Playhouse until the 12th of October. Now, before I go, just a few housekeeping notes. If you're a theater professional, head on over to curtaincallonline.com and sign up for a free profile page. All you have to do is create an account with an email address, make up a cool password, and away you go. You can follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, @curtaincall, and you can follow me @JohnSchwab. We'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions or feedback for the podcast. Get in touch with us via any of the social media platforms I just mentioned, or write to me personally at John@curtaincallonline.com. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to Dave Malloy for his time, and I'd like to wish him and the entire company of Ghost Quartet the best of British in their run at the Boulevard Theater. It will run from the 24th of October 2019 to the 4th of January 2020, and I will put links for tickets in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the Curtain Call Theater Podcast, and I will catch you all next week. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.